Center for Inclusive Childcare welcomes you to Inclusion Matters. We share resources and information to support quality childcare for all children. By partnering with early childhood professionals, parents, grandparents, and other caregivers, we work together to help every young child thrive. Welcome to the 300th episode of Inclusion Matters. 300 episodes. It's hard to imagine that we have reached that milestone. Thank you all for just sticking with us and continuing to listen and provide feedback for new shows. This 300th episode is really going to be looking back at the variety and also the key things that we have hopefully provided to you in your work with young children or your care of young children. We know that parents, grandparents, early educators, special educators, therapists, all sorts of people use Inclusion Matters as a resource. So we look forward to this episode and hearing from you what you think of it.
Welcome to Inclusion Matters. Produced by the Center for Inclusive Childcare,
aka the CICC.
We're located at inclusivechildcare.org.
Welcome to Inclusion Matters, a podcast of the Center for Inclusive Childcare. I'm Cindy Croft, Director of the Center, and I'm here today with my two colleagues, Priscilla Weigel and Dia Anderson. Hi, girls.
Hello.
Hello.
All right, so happy to be here again doing our podcasting. And we have just been visiting among ourselves about our Inclusion Matters and talking about the why. Why does Inclusion Matters? Why to our audience? Why are they listening and why are they coming to our podcast to listen to us talk about inclusion and why it's important to them? Mm-hmm. So maybe you could tell us a little bit, Priscilla, about what we're thinking about today in our podcast.
Well, we were thinking about the fact that oftentimes when maybe a parent of a child that's developing typically is part of your child care, or maybe you have a child that has some needs. What about them being in a setting with their same age peers who have different abilities? What about that situation is creating good development for them in looking at all their developmental domains? So what we thought we'd talk about is just how being an inclusive child care provider, what does that mean? What are you providing that encourages the language development, the social, emotional, the motor, and the cognition of not just the child with special needs that's in your care or with the child that maybe has some delays, but what is that encouraging just across the board for all the kids in your care too?
As you can hear from our first clip of the earlier days of Inclusion Matters, we've come a long way. We've gone from an intro that was done and recorded by our sound editor's kids to something really high-tech and fabulous that was actually written especially for us by Justin Hartke, who is our sound editor now and also a member of the Jolly Pops band. And we're so grateful to him for his creativity in that. And it's time for those updates to happen, 300 episodes. So as you could hear from the clip, the early days of Inclusion Matters were pretty rudimentary. We had a super small MP3 player with a couple of microphones sticking out of the one end. And Cindy Croft and I would often record in my family room. And we would just talk about things that would come up in our coaching work and in our work supporting trainers throughout Minnesota on the Project Exceptional content and just anything that was coming our way related to inclusive care and quality inclusive care. Cindy Croft, our founder, and Dia Anderson and I were the three original employees of the Center for Inclusive Childcare. And in 2026, we will be celebrating our 30th year. And that is a big milestone as well. So this celebration of our 300th episode is kind of a lead into what's to come for the future of us and our organization. And Cindy and Dia and I alluded to some of the reasons why Inclusion Matters came to be and why we felt it was important to start this podcast with this type of foundation and philosophy. And we really have tried over these 300 episodes to stay true to that foundation of inclusive care matters to children who have needs and are unique in different ways. All kids are unique, as we know, but also to the children who maybe don't have a diagnosis or are following the typical path of development, and their families. Everyone benefits. And so some of the clips that we're including in this episode are just going to highlight the history and the past things that we've discussed and how that has influenced, hopefully, the early childhood landscape of Minnesota and also other states across the nation and actually across the world, because we do have listeners all over. So I look forward to having you settle in and just listen to some of these recaps, and I hope you enjoy it. This next clip is a very special one to me because I was able to record with one of our coaches, and her name is Chris Helwig. And Chris has been on our team since the earliest days of inclusion coaching. She joined our team right away in the beginning when we received funding to provide coaching to sites. And Chris and I go way back because we worked at Fraser together in classrooms and worked many years together. And so I feel really blessed to have Chris continue to be on our team to this day. And in her podcast, we really talked about the fact that our coaching can change the way people see children with special needs, and it can be kind of this demystifying opportunity. And Chris also brings a perspective as a parent. She has a daughter with Down syndrome. And so that perspective that she carries into every coaching site that she supports is so helpful. And the respect that we all try to embody in our relationships with our educators out there in the field of early childhood across Minnesota, we really try to foster this partnership with families. And so I feel Chris highlights that in this episode. I hope you enjoy.
We're going to just start with some of those pieces that really can help you as a childcare setting set up for success when you want to have an inclusive environment. And being inclusive isn't just saying that you have a bunch of books about kids with special needs that you're reading in your book corner. It's more about an attitude. It's more about those foundational pieces that just help kind of everything flow together to make it seem welcoming and allowing all kids to feel like they belong.
I think it's more about having everybody see that kids are more alike than they are different.
Right. And that's truly what we're here to talk about today, is what are some ways that you can help all the children in your care understand how they're connected. And one of those things is, may not sound like the best way to start, but it's acknowledging differences, pointing out that we all do things differently, and that's okay. It makes the world more interesting.
Yes, yes. I know when my daughter was younger, I used to go into her kindergarten classroom or first grade classroom, and we would read a book. Mm-hmm. And it talked about the differences, and we were just very open and honest about those differences, and the children would ask questions and we would answer those questions.
Yeah.
And it kind of took the mystery out of it.
Right.
So just, I think, acknowledging those differences and being open and honest about those mm-hmm. with the children.
Yeah.
Is very helpful.
Because kids are curious.
Correct.
They just
yes.
want information. And I think that a lot of times in the past, when a child would ask a question about someone maybe in a wheelchair or someone who looked different than they did, parents would say, oh, don't ask that question. Or even providers would say, oh, that's not nice to ask. But then what we're saying is there's something secret, there's something mysterious, there's something possibly bad about
right.
that.
Something and, not right.
Yes. And so I think that your point too of just going in and being really open about the uniqueness of your daughter and also about those in your care out there, those who are listening, just really talking about the fact that wouldn't the room be boring if we all were exactly the same? How would I keep track of who's who? And just highlighting some of those differences that are adding to the group. I remember a student that I had years ago who wasn't very verbal. He didn't use a lot of language, but he was really great at whistling. And pointing that out in a time when other kids maybe were looking at him like, why aren't you saying anything, and saying, but have you ever heard this guy whistle? He's really good at it. Show him how you whistle. And realizing that not every child that age could whistle. So mm-hmm. It was one of those moments where that group of kids realized, wow, he can do something that I can't do. Just like I might be able to do some things that are maybe a little trickier for him, but it doesn't mean he can't try.
Right.
Yeah.
Great idea. I like that.
It really adds a lot to that whole inclusive environment, really modeling that sense of belonging and being a part of things, which takes us to modeling appropriate behavior as another way to create that inclusive environment. So you are setting the stage as that adult in the room.
Yes. And I think one thing we know about young children is they're always watching us.
Yes.
So they're going to model our behavior. So if we are modeling that it's okay that there's differences and we acknowledge those, we're showing them that appropriate behavior, I think they just fall right behind us mm-hmm. and do just what we are doing.
Right.
Just have that level of acceptance.
Right. And I think our confidence too in the way we, the tone that we use in how we explain things as more of a matter of fact, this is how it is, this is, everything's okay in that tone as the adult in the room saying, you know what, yep, the crying's kind of loud right now because it's too loud in the room and that's hurting her ears. And she needs something to cover her ears. What could we find for her? Let's help her. Mm-hmm. And helping that other peer to see, yeah, sometimes you cry when you're uncomfortable. You do the same when you're not feeling good. Crying is a way that she's telling us she needs
right.
help.
Yes, that's what I was just thinking too, is that, you know, explaining to the child or children that that's her way of telling us it's too loud
mm-hmm.
and she would like people to quiet down, please, or whatever.
Right.
You know, that's their form of communication, and explaining it that way, that, again, being very open and honest about those differences
mm-hmm. yeah.
and making sure that children know that's okay.
In this next episode with Michelle Fallon, we have the opportunity to talk about the really key principles of the early childhood educator building connection, not just with families for themselves in that relationship, but also modeling and partnering with families in the building of their relationship with their child and how they see their child and how they see themselves as parents. And so Michelle Fallon, who is a wonderful infant and early childhood mental health specialist, a partner of CICC for many years, she shares a lot of good insights in the clip from this episode.
So today we're going to talk about something that I think is part of the job of a child care provider, a professional in the field. However, it's something that maybe isn't touched on a lot because we're working on caring for the kids. And Michelle is here to really help us understand ways to facilitate some of that great parent-child bonding and connectedness in a family setting that we might not think is really our role, but part of our role is to support a whole healthy child, and family is part of that. Would you agree?
I would totally agree. And I think that's a really, we don't talk about that enough. I think, you know, talk about improving the quality of childcare, and it's so often about providing children with learning skills mm-hmm. and pre-kindergarten kinds of things. And we're really missing the opportunity to promote healthy parent-child relationships.
Yeah.
And research tells us that that is the most reliable predictor of children's school and social emotional success, is the quality of the relationship they have with their parent.
Wow.
So when you think about it, a caregiver and parent are really co-parenting a child.
Yeah.
And so how do we think about that? What are we doing to enhance that co-parenting relationship between the caregiver and the parent? Because the quality of that relationship also impacts the child.
So here's my big question. What are some suggestions for helping folks to even just begin the process of thinking about that? And I mean, what would you say would be a great place to start that might foster some of those really essential connections?
Well, I think first of all, to as providers, for us to keep in mind how powerful the messages are that we give to parents. I think every parent is asking, what kind of a child do you think I have?
Yeah.
And what kind of a parent do you think I am?
Mm-hmm.
And rarely would that be said out loud, but I guarantee you every parent is wondering.
Yes.
And so to think about how we are messaging parents, is there, I mean, no matter how the day went, is there one cute thing or one positive thing I can tell a parent about her child when she picks up?
And sometimes in situations, especially those with challenging behaviors involved or those sleepless nights that are due to perhaps a special need or a diagnosis, parents are really looking for some guidance and support and someone that's really going to notice that they're doing a great job too. Because I think not that we have to just say great job or, you know, just it. Just anything that we notice that they're doing well or that's enhancing their child's life. And it might even be that new pair of shoes that they got that their child was so eager to show off today.
Yeah.
How you really, you figured that out, that he loved those light up shoes or that new backpack really seemed to really give him an extra skip in his step today or what you put in his lunch. Some of those things can be so easily forgotten by, because we're in the midst of our day. But if we really take the time to think about them and point them out, it's just a little pat on the back. And, you know, as parents, you don't get a lot of pats on the back.
No, you don't. And I think, you know, I like to think that any of us who works with parents and young children, that we really think about the fact that we're involved with three clients, so to speak. First, of course, the child. The child is our focus. But also the parent and how the parent is doing, because that will impact the child so directly. But then the third client is the quality of the relationship between the parent and the child. And how am I attending to that? What have I done today to promote that parent-child relationship? Whether and sometimes, you know, as you're saying, it's not there. Sometimes it's hard to find a positive.
Yeah.
So finding that, but then just thinking, taking the parent's perspective. I wonder what it's like to have a long day at work and then come pick up your child and have to hear that your child bit somebody today again. So how can I deliver that message, which I have to deliver, but in a way that is trying to imagine what it's like to be the parent listening to that.
Right. Yeah.
One of the great partnerships that we've been able to foster for these 300 episodes and beyond, for these 30 years of CICC, is one with early childhood special education in our state system. And our coaching can provide really amazing opportunities for the early childhood special educator to partner in a different way with the early childhood staff and the childcare providers, because we are there oftentimes to help extend what that early childhood special educator is providing as far as strategies and supports, because they're going in really focused on that one child. And what we can help them do is help support what they're working on with the staff of the childcare setting or the family childcare home. And we can also extend some of those tools and resources across all of the children and all of the programming. So I hope you enjoy this episode with Kylie Hendrick from St. Paul Public Schools and Jackie Johnson, one of our CICC coaches. And this clip really highlights some of the things that can occur in a real positive partnership with early childhood special education.
If we are able to get time within the classroom, but then also some time when students aren't present to really talk together and to really problem solve together, it really makes a big difference in the student's success. We find that when we come in and, you know, we might have ideas or we might be asking questions and then we leave, teachers are busy. Childcare providers are so busy. And having time to be able to follow through with those suggestions and having time to collaborate with us seem like they are sometimes the hardest things. So finding those times to make that whole collaboration and communication successful is really important.
I know sometimes as a coach, I might send information to a provider, or I might say, hey, just watch over the next week and see, you know, you've been feeling like this is an issue for this child. How many times do you really observe that? And I think sometimes I feel like I'm asking too much because it's just another extra thing. But do you sometimes give providers sort of, I would use the word, like a little homework or a little follow through thing to watch for you as she's there, he or she is there all day, every day?
Yeah, we will often, you know, say, can you keep an eye on that? And let me know next week when I come in, when that's typically occurring or how often that's occurring, just like your example, Jackie. But we also talk about some strategies, you know, and try to come up with strategies together for the child. And we always want to kind of check back and circle back with the providers and see how that went for them. See if they were able to practice it during that daily routine. See if it felt okay and how that follow through worked for them. And the more honest providers are with us, the more we're able to problem solve maybe a new, you know, a new way or come up with a new strategy or idea when we know that, hey, this maybe didn't work. And when we have that open communication, the collaboration and planning is much more successful for the child.
Next clip is one of my favorites. We've had the opportunity to record with so many amazing professionals who work with children and really do amazing work with young children and their families. And so through some of our funding through the Greater Twin Cities United Way 80 by 3 project, we were able to record videos and podcasts with the pediatric occupational therapist, Alyssa Mason. And in this episode, we really focus on sensory supports for young children who have experienced trauma. And we know that trauma can really affect a child's development and also their sensory systems and how they see the world and how they feel safe in the world. And so Alyssa, in this clip, is really highlighting some of the things that create success when you're building that trusting partnership with a child and trying to provide them with the supports that will be helpful to them. And sometimes they don't always know that. And so take a listen to Alyssa as she shares some of those strategies.
I know commonly we're always like, oh, let's find the triggers and then we'll solve the problem. but it's just not that simple. That's not a simple thing to do for a kid who hasn't had trauma but is having sensory differences. Finding triggers is a really big challenge. So I think it's great to look for triggers and see if we can figure out what are those common trends, where do we see these things, because then we can either help prepare or avoid those things. But lots of times we're not going to be able to identify it. We're an outsider processing the world in the way that we do, and we might just not be able to see these trends. We might not be able to identify that. And just because you can't identify the trigger doesn't mean you failed and doesn't mean that there's nothing you can do. We're still going to try our best to support these kids. So when we think about strategies, we need to think about the fact that we have to be creative and we have to think outside the box sometimes, because these kids are processing information in a way that might not make sense to us. So they might not love our great ideas that we have as caregivers on the ways that we want to support them. And we have to be really responsive to them and where they're at in those moments in order to be successful in supporting them.
In our conversations in the past, we realized that the challenge there is we're working with and we're spending time with these young children who maybe cannot articulate those needs with us and toward the strategies that they may not even be able to say, stop, no, that's not helpful. You know, those things that would really be great if they could tell us, oh, I like that. That was a great strategy. I mean, realistically, and I think in the past conversations that we've had with you, Alyssa, and also in your videos that you've done for us, you know, talking about the permission and the asking children as you're starting that intervention or that support, can you go into that a little bit of just some useful things to be
reminded of, and it can work for all children, truly, that respectful technique that I know you're so good at.
Yeah. So this is really that consent piece. And we know consent is important on a general level, but I think sometimes it gets forgotten a little when we're working with younger kids because they maybe don't have the words. They can't say, yes, love that strategy. And so we don't always respond. And when kids are struggling, us as caregivers, we want to help them. We're like, I know what to do. I can help you. And we sometimes just try so hard when we're not responding to what the kids' voices or bodies are telling us. So with the consent piece and especially in our kids with trauma, but really with all kids, like you said, we're going to respond to what they're telling us. So if verbally they're saying, no, stop, don't do that. I don't like that. Get away from me. We're going to listen and we're going to respond. But we're also going to respond in nonverbals. So that can look like a rigid body, darting eyes, those big, big deer in the headlights eyes, flinching, fleeing, dropping to the floor, kicking, screaming, blocking you, turning away. They can be really little things like pursed lips or quick gasps, closed eyes, things like that. And so those are things that are telling us, like, they don't want what we're offering them. They don't want us doing that thing that we're doing. And so what we need to do in those situations is find kind of a balance of respecting what they're asking us, but not leaving them, not abandoning them in that moment. And so if you're saying, leave me alone, I'm going to stop maybe being right in your face or saying, hey, will you do this? Hey, can you come over here? Hey, can I give you a hug? All those things that you're telling me, leave me alone. And so I might take a step back. I may take two steps back, but I'm going to say, hey, I'm still here for you. You want me to move back? I'll move back, but I'm still here for you. I'm going to stay right here to support you if you need it or when you're ready. It's finding that balance of respecting them, but also still supporting them and not leaving them alone. So if we're thinking about infants, maybe they're just like fighting us, and they clearly just don't want us right there. So maybe I'm putting you down, but I'm not going anywhere. I'm still sitting right here with you. I'm looking at you. I'm here for you. And you didn't want my hands on your body, but that doesn't mean that I am like, fine, you're in the crib. You didn't want me. So there you go. Because what we need to do, especially with trauma, is build a trust in a relationship. Because again, they're feeling unsafe. So if they're not feeling like you listen to their cues and you do what they're telling you to do, then how are they going to trust you to support them through this moment? So if we can find a way that nice balance between those two things for kids, that starts helping build a long-term trust that maybe I can let you help me when I'm feeling unsafe.
I keep thinking about that idea of the felt safety that I know people bring up with children who have experienced trauma, like, or in adults too. It's not just about literally being safe when we look at the environment, but it's that they feel safe enough. And part of that, like you said, is knowing you're there. You're going to help them solve this. But I also am thinking about being a detective, right? Because when we talk about children who experience trauma, I've heard over and over this quote, you don't say what's wrong with you, you say what happened to you. But we know we don't always find that out. We don't always know. Maybe we'll never know. But sort of what I hear you saying is really, really, I'm thinking of a magnifying lens now, you know, like really watching. And how does this child respond? Not for a trigger, but I just want to see how they're responding to the world so I can get some clues to how I can help them solve it.
Yeah, I love that you said that because sometimes kids' big body responses give us clues to what kind of strategies actually might help them. Like when I watch kids that I work with, sometimes I'll see them like throw themselves against the big crash pillows that I have in the gym that I have. And sometimes I'm like, maybe their body really likes that. Like they're trying to figure out how to make their body feel better when really it looks like we're just mad and throwing myself against the wall, but maybe that input feels good. So maybe once we are ready to accept a strategy, I'm going to think about how can I give their body that like big impact work in a way that helps us co-regulate together and get back to there. So like you're saying, like being a detective, the more we watch and learn from kids, and sometimes watching and learning is so hard because we're like, they're upset. I should be doing something. I should be helping. But observing is actually so, 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 so helpful when we're talking about sensory processing.
One of the things that Inclusion Matters has afforded me as the host is to foster and build partnerships across the United States with those who work in the field of inclusion and early childhood education. And I'm super excited to highlight this clip with one of our partners, Jannie Kozlowski, who works in the Technical Assistance Specialist area at the Frank Porter Graham Child Development Institute at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And she has spent her career, her latter part of her career, really focusing on the research about inclusion and how inclusion is going in our nation, in the early childhood field. And so in our episode, where she's also talking about a book that she has written called Every Child Can Fly, she's highlighting some of those research pieces that I think help us share with others about why inclusion is so important. So take a listen to Jannie Kozlowski as she shares with me in one of our episodes of Inclusion Matters.
We have this job of being the support and the educator for all the baby birds and every single one, and the different ways that they come to us and the different challenges and strengths that they bring. And so that was kind of the inspiration for the book, because I really do believe that all kids with the right supports and nurturing, that they can all fly.
That's a great way to think about the work too, and all the baby birds and all, I mean, truly we are given such an awesome responsibility mm-hmm. in the relationship with that child and with that family to support their, the success of that child and to do our very best. And your book has given a lot of great strategies for that. And so when we think about, you know, the idea of inclusion in early childhood education, what do we know from research about how effective it can really be for kids?
Yeah. You know, I've done a lot of work with educators since I've left the classroom and providing technical assistance, and worked with Head Start teachers and childcare teachers, and certainly lots of professional development I've provided. And I continue to hear this concern about, you know, is inclusion right for every child? And what we know from the research is that children with and without disabilities benefit from learning together. And what we know is that children with disabilities, more than half of the time, receive their services in segregated preschool settings. So we do not have a good system for inclusion across our country. In fact, you know, more than half of kids are not served in inclusive settings when they're 3 to 5 years old. And that's the age where it should be the easiest, you know?
Yeah.
And it's also the age that really sets the trajectory for children.
When you think about 300 episodes, that's a lot of content. Those are a lot of conversations, a lot of people. And we hope that you have found those episodes to be very helpful to you. And we are always looking for feedback as we start on episode 301 and move forward in the future life of Inclusion Matters. We've had so many amazing guests focused on language development, autism diagnosis, and what's the right program for a child with autism and characteristics along the spectrum, learning disabilities. We've had so many great partners, Childcare Aware of Minnesota, the Autism Portal from Minnesota, Learn the Signs, Act Early, Help Me Grow, Help Me Connect, Follow Along, the Successful Learner Equation, working with the Minnesota Department of Education, Early Childhood Special Ed. We've talked with Minnesota Department of Health on a lot of different topics, one being weight inclusivity, which is really a new concept, I think, and the awareness of that is so important. And so we were grateful to have an opportunity to build that podcast. And we've had so many amazing partners over the years. And so I hope that you've enjoyed this 300th episode. I hope that you will share your feedback on our social media and reach out with other ideas for episodes that you think would be helpful. Thank you for listening for these 300, and we look forward to many, many more. I appreciate you, and I appreciate the work you're doing out caring for children, spending time with children, loving children. That's what we want to hear about, and we want to equip you to do well. So take care, and thank you for listening to Inclusion Matters.
For more information and a wide range of resources, visit inclusivechildcare.org. You'll find information on our coaching services and support on topics such as healthy child development, strategies for encouraging positive behavior, and guidance on including children with unique social, emotional, and learning needs, and much more.